A treat for our German-speaking listeners today, with a travel manual designed to guide them gently but firmly off the beaten track, plus a mag full of mutts and the view from Australia. All that coming up ahead of us here today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, with me, Tom Edwards. We start the programme with a handsome travel title from Germany. Il Paradiso is an annual publication with each issue dedicated to a single country. Its focus is on the more unusual aspects of travel. The latest issue is all about Portugal. To find out more, Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to the magazine's publisher and editor-in-chief, Andreas Wellnitz.
I think Il Paradiso is independent travel magazine, first of all. And the concept is like that we are dedicating each issue to one country, the culture, of course, the people and the food. You have to imagine Il Paradiso, or to see it as a kind of analog social media platform, because what we do is, you know, that situation that somebody's asking on Facebook, do you have a tip for a good hotel in Marseille, for example? We do the same. We ask for every issue our friends and colleagues for their tips, for their secret spots where they love to go. This we mix with stories about the country. We ask our colleagues, which are like, we have a great network of writers and photographers. We ask them what they know about the country or which story they want to tell.
And I have the latest issue here, and you have a great selection of contributors, by the way, including Christoph Amend. Tell us about the Portugal edition, because, you know, it's the fifth edition, so you published four before, right?
We started with Italy, then France, Greece, Sweden, and now it's Portugal. People asking us how we choose the country. So if you dedicate every issue to one country, it's sometimes hard to tell, sometimes just a feeling in the stomach. But Portugal was... We were quite sure about doing this because everybody we were talking to, all friends or families, everybody just came from Portugal or just prepared for a trip to Portugal. And we thought, like, what's it with Portugal? Yeah, so we went ourselves and to see what the people see in Portugal right now. And I think the rise of tourism in Portugal is like 150% in the last 2 years. That's a good sign for like a trend country.
Portugal is very cool at the moment. Another thing, Andres, that got my attention for your magazine, I just love the design. I would like you to talk more about the design and also the selection for your cover picture, because I have something that I love about abandoned swimming pools. And tell us a bit more about the cover and about the design structure, because I know you have experience with design as well.
The art director is, you mentioned Christoph Arment, who is the editor-in-chief of Zeit magazine and who contributed a story to the Portugal issue. And the art director is of Il Paradiso, is also the art director of Zeit magazine. So we are very close family. And Jasmine, the art director, she had basically the idea to do a small format print magazine, which you can take on your trips and with a very classical typeface and good readable for everybody, like if it's a grandma or if it's a young girl, it doesn't matter. So that was the thing. And the choice of cover images, we have this diagonal logo type, so it's like Il Paradiso written diagonal over the whole cover. You need to have a certain image which can stand this logo type, which is like very special. We like to have with every cover, like to tell a little bit like a secret story, like I said, like the hidden spots and something you find and something you might find by coincidence. And we are not a magazine that like celebrates tourism. We take it serious to make a travel magazine, and also we discuss the curse and blessing of tourism. So we want to make a little mystery about the cover every time.
Well, so I'm not going to ask you exactly where is the swimming pool, otherwise, you know, spoil the secret in some ways. Another question that I have for you, Andres, about the business model. Oh, cool, the magazine costs, you know, 10 euros. I believe it comes once a year. Tell us a bit more about the business plan for the magazine. Is it kind of perhaps a magazine that is only sold in Germany, or do you have plans to expand?
So to be honest, there is no such a thing as a business plan. It's like I said, it's a family project. I started it with my wife. We had the idea while we were traveling through France. Then we asked friends and colleagues, and we can rely on this great network of people, because we are working in journalism or in graphic design or photography. We know a lot of people, and we invest our free time in it. So that's the reason why it basically comes out once a year. We always had plans to do more, but how can you do it? You have such a limited time free on working on this kind of luxury project. Yeah, like I said, we can rely on these writers. They invest their contributions, their reportage text, their photography. They make it possible with their contribution that we have this magazine. And it's a love project. And we sell, if we sell out every issue, which we have a circulation of 3,000 to 5,000 every time, then yeah, we cover the cost, the printing cost, the travel expenses. We were planning with the embassies of certain countries, native language issues. With Sweden, we were very far in the discussion with the embassy, but at the end, it didn't turn out. So we have ideas how we can push it forward, but it's a complicated business. But we still have fun to do it. It's like, even if we don't have make any money with it.
Do you know already what's the next country, or are you in discussion at the moment?
So right now we are in discussion, we're collecting ideas for the next issue. Like always, we start always when the latest issue came out, then we start discussing. I just came back from a trip to Japan. Mm. That was the first time in my life in Japan, very exciting. I spent a couple of days with the photographer Jürgen Teller working on a fashion editorial. And yeah, fascinating. Maybe it's Japan, but it could be also like Iceland, Montenegro, or South Africa. So we don't know yet.
Il Paradiso's editor-in-chief Andreas Velnitz in conversation there with our own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Regular listeners to Monocle 24, and indeed readers of Monocle magazine, will know that one of the few things we love as much as print is dogs. So you can imagine how excited we were about Dog, a lifestyle magazine that, in its own words, explores the presence and influence of dogs and their owners in society. We've charted its progress through issues 1 and 2, but issue 3 is hot off the presses. I'm delighted to say that Dog's editor-in-chief, Julian Victoria, and the editor of the magazine, Emily Rogers, are both here. Julian, Emily, welcome to the Stack. And let me start by saying congrats on the most recent issue. Emily, tell me how you came to have the cover star. The Dalmatian, of course, must have been sort of long in the back of the mind. Emily, is that fair to say?
I don't know if it was, really. I feel like we actually don't tend to choose until quite close to the time where, okay, we need to decide right now. Do you think that's the case, Julian?
Last time that we spoke, we wanted something different in terms of weather, when something warm. So we kind of like investigated which breeds are from the coast, beach and stuff like that. So something close home, which is the Dalmatian coast in Croatia. So we were like, why don't we just go for the Dalmatian for issue 3? So that's how we picked it.
Yeah, we should say there's some really beautiful pictures of the Dalmatian coast. It takes you there. It's sort of that washed out look. It's very sort of sultry. You can feel the sun. How much of a challenge, though, is it? And I know we've talked about this before, to kind of throw out the options and zero in on what you're going to cover, because there's quite a long germination period for each issue. You're up to issue 3 now. Does it become easier, the sort of mechanics of story selection, the layouts, all this kind of thing? How's that kind of process going?
I think with issue 3 we actually kind of like find out really good stuff that we should consider for next issue when we pick the breed, especially because the feedback with issue 2, which was the Shiba Inu, became very popular. And one of the reasons why it sold very well is because the Shiba Inu is a very popular breed, and it's a very modern dog to have these days, and people really want to find more about this breed. Mm. So some people have started suggesting, which breed are you coming up next, because that way I can place my orders. So I'm like, you know, we're just trying to figure out that should we go that route, something very popular that people are going to like, yeah, we're going to get this magazine because I know that dog and I'm very fan of this breed. Or should we just go with the original idea that was present a dog that people are actually not really familiar with, but they can learn about it? We're trying to figure out what to do next with that.
It's always good to watch the space. Namely, that's interesting because I think, obviously, on this program, we often talk about devotees of independent print and people are very loyal to the magazines they like. But maybe dog breed loyalty, it could be a stronger bond even than magazine loyalty. Do you find that people are quite evangelical about their dog? Are you constantly being sort of lobbied by people that you need to look at whatever it might be?
Yeah, so I think that's the thing that Julian was just saying about which breed do we pick, because if we go down the route of a really rare breed, which was kind of the idea originally, it's kind of not necessarily going to prove as popular as when we're picking these breeds that people know really well. I think people want to see their dog on the front yeah. cover, and that's what's going to appeal to people. So it's quite tough. All of my friends have said, oh, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Because it's what they have. And I think you're very loyal to, I mean, I really want to do Tibetan Terriers because I have Tibetan Terriers. And I think when it's your breed, you're really keen to see it on the front cover and learn more about it. So we have lots of people pushing ideas to us.
And Angelina, we talked before about the composition, and this edition is no different. There's some, as I said, very beautiful photography, some compelling pieces. You've got really interesting artwork. There's the kind of cartoony kind of storyboard stuff as well. How about that content size with the magazine? Do you feel you've kind of got it now? I mean, issue 3 is still relatively early days in the lifespan of a printed product. Are you still sort of learning? Do you feel you've kind of refined
yes.
it? How's that going?
We are learning every time that we do something, we learn something new. But in terms of the layout, the stories that we want to cover, I think we have them already. Like, we know we want to have some really good photo essays of, you know, a very talented photographer, for example, or we're going to have a really good illustration essay on very talented illustrators. So we basically have those every issue since issue 1. And then, of course, we have, like, personal stories, which are the most exciting ones. We get, you know, a big section in the back, which we always look for stories of dogs plus a subject. So in the first yeah. issue, we have guys with dogs. Second issue, we have girls with dogs. And now we have couples with dogs. So we kind of want to repeat that story through all the issues and kind of, like, keep that look that we are trying to make for the magazine. So.
And there's some brilliant illustrations kind of inspired by the Dalmatian, which are kind of largely spotted, as I guess you might have imagined. Emily, let me just ask you, they say never work with children and animals, this kind of thing. What about shooting these mutts? Because I guess you can have models who can be a bit tricky and don't necessarily do what you want them to do. But dogs, you know, they're quite willful, or they can be. And the Dalmatian is a willful breed in particular. Do you already have a big sort of litany of stories of non-cooperative and unhelpful subjects of photographs?
Yeah, I think we thought the Dalmatian might be difficult because they're known for being really energetic and a bit crazy. But we were really lucky with Gaspard, who is our cover boy. He was just
very
really
distinguished, isn't he?
Yeah, he was just very.
And his behaviour matched?
Oh, yeah, he was.
Wow.
Really, really calm, a really good boy. I think he's very used to being in front of the camera. You know, his owners were kind of explaining to us that he gets stopped all the time and has his photo taken. But in issue 1, we had some real difficult ones that we thought we're not even going to get the shots. And it was literally a case of trying to click the camera in between throwing a ball and the dog barking. But we didn't have too many bad behaved dogs for issue 3, did we? We were
no,
quite
we
lucky.
But saying that, I think we were lucky with this one, and we tried to find other Dalmatians, but they are very difficult to find. We thought that because it's one of those very distinguished and well-known breeds, we're going to find it everywhere, but it was very difficult to find one. And here in London, or even in Croatia, when we went there, we just found one.
It's strange because we were saying they're really popular, but they're actually not very common.
Yeah.
So yeah, we didn't really find many people at all that actually owned a Dalmatian.
He's obviously a superstar. I like this one of him looking around the corner.
I know.
Our listeners will just have to sort of go with me on this, but he knows he's in frame for that one. A real superstar. Now, tell me, in terms, Julian, of your ongoing inspiration, and again, I've asked you this before, but are you still sort of combing newsstands to find other titles that inspire you? What's that process like? And I know you've brought in a couple of magazines. Maybe you could speak to how you continue to be inspired by rival publications or things you've always followed.
The funny part is, like, I do go into magazine stores to look for that inspiration because there are so many talented people coming up with magazines. And, you know, you will find one once in a while. And lucky enough, 3 weeks ago, I went shopping and I found this magazine, which is called Water. And what I love about it is because of the title, like us, you know exactly what you're going to get by the title. So this magazine called Water is about water. And they play with it, with the concept, and the whole magazine is about water. And they have these amazing, beautiful pictures, well-written articles. And the whole composition of the magazine is amazing. And the cover is beautiful and is also nominated with us of Cover of the Year by the Stack magazine.
Well, I was going to say, maybe you could just describe this cover that you've got in front of you for our listeners and how they sort of go about achieving that.
It's just like a very well-composed picture of like a Chinese village and have two kids in the back, which is like they're looking at the camera and they're really striking. Mm. But this whole magazine is, you know, you go through it and it's just, the pictures are just beautiful. I mean, it's just the layout is great. And it's a very chunky magazine. And you think that it's going to be expensive. But it was very surprisingly, it was a really good price for it. So, and the guy who actually created this magazine, his Instagram is also well done and is beautiful. But he has a dog. And beautiful dog. I think he has one of the dogs that don't bark.
Oh, right.
So I actually went and stalked him on Instagram and I sent him a message because I really want him to get in touch with us because I would love to interview him.
I thought it was going to have to be a Portuguese water dog, obviously. That would have made sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. But this magazine is good. The only thing that I funny enough is, and this is a proper question, when we went to buy it, I was wondering how much it was. And I look everywhere and there's no barcode or price. And I was thinking like, maybe this is like the new trend now that we're being so minimal about everything that the barcode and the price are, you know, not necessary anymore. So I went to the register and the guy was like, I don't know how much this is. And they asked the manager and they called like the distributor. Like no one knew about how much the magazine was. So I had to go online and actually find it. And I was very surprised for the price. It was really, really good. I was like, okay, I'll take it. Like, I don't care.
So maybe they should be making more of a selling point of that.
Exactly.
If it's so reasonably priced.
So, but there's one of my biggest fears when I'm doing the magazine to forget about my barcode or keep the barcode from the issue before. But now, you know, with this magazine, I was like, I don't need to put a barcode on.
I don't even bother anymore with these trifling details. Emily, what about when you cost and I have a newsstand? Is it a question of sort of looking at magazines and thinking, oh, I wish we'd come up with that, or that's a good idea? Is it sort of covetous in that way? Or do you find, you know, like Julian's talking about, that there's just inspiration everywhere you look? Particularly, you know, if we think of this boom in independent magazines, so many great titles. What's your experience when you have a browse of the shelves?
I don't think I've ever looked and thought, oh, I wish we'd thought of that, because there aren't many magazines doing what we're doing. Whereas I feel like if we were doing something, say, like a fashion magazine, then there's more chance of you feeling like that. But before I start working on an issue, I'll always go to a magazine shop and buy like a copy of like the Gentleman's Serial and some really lovely magazines, because I still think it kind of puts you in that mindset of really good copy, really good layout and everything. So even though they're not doing what we're doing, it's definitely really good to get inspiration from them and just kind of put yourself in that mindset. And to me, like, that's just a really lovely Saturday just to go and buy these kinds of magazines.
That's not work, is it?
No.
It's research.
Exactly.
Speak to me in 5 or 6 hours when I finish browsing all this.
Yeah.
Now, guys, I know you don't like to give away your trade secrets. Let's cast ahead already to issue 4. Why not? Tell me about what are the dreams? What are the ambitions as we look?
Well, we're having this conversation last week, and we're probably going to have this conversation later today because we don't know. At this point, it's
full mystery.
Exactly.
Because I like it.
We just like, we don't know what to do next. We, you know, we wanted to go with a breed that we thought about it, but then it was like, it's not going to be as popular as the other auctions that we have. So we definitely need to just make a decision of what to do next. You know, do we want to go what people want, or should we stick to our guns?
But also because it's always so tied into travel and where the dog's from, we don't want anything to become repetitive. So we have to think about that as well, because that's such a big part of it. So the Dalmatian coast, it can't be anything that's similar to that. So that always plays a big role as well in the breed we choose.
So, yeah, so we're still deciding which one we're going to do.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't wait for one. Even though I only have issue 3 fresh on the desk in front of me, I'm already thinking about issue 4. I've got some suggestions.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll make them after the programme. Listen, it's always great to have you with us. Issue 3, another triumph. A monochrome beauty.
Thank you.
The Dalmatian. Emily, Julian, thanks for coming to see us.
Thank you so much.
With American dominance fading and China ascendant, the world order feels less stable than it's been for many years. Understanding it is an urgent and complicated business.
There are dozens of English language magazines, websites and academic journals that seek to explain and influence international affairs, but the vast majority of them have a decidedly Atlanticist bent, favouring perspectives from the United States and here in the UK. Now a new print publication is shaking up the status quo. Australian Foreign Affairs offers an Antipodean take on international relations. Monocle's Henry Rees-Sheridan spoke to its editor, Jonathan Perlman.
So Australian Foreign Affairs is a new publication that launched this month. It will come out 3 times a year in print in Australia, and it will also be available online and in digital form for anyone around the world who's interested. Each issue will feature a range of different types of writing, essays, some reportage, book reviews, correspondence, transcripts of interviews where appropriate. And each issue will have a theme, and the main essays in the issue will be based along that theme. The aim will be to include writers from Australia and around the world looking at issues that are important to Australia, but also to this region, the Asia Pacific. It is unusual for a new print publication to be launched, and it's being launched by Schwartz Media, a publication house which has some form in resisting the usual sort of global media decline. It launched this publication, but before that it launched a weekly newspaper several years ago. Before that, it launched a monthly magazine. And before that, as you mentioned, it started with a quarterly essay. Quite a well-known feature of the Australian media landscape. It includes one main essay, often by a prominent or respected writer, looking at an issue of concern or of concern to Australia. Obviously, this new publication, Australian Foreign Affairs, will very much have a foreign affairs focus. Quarterly essay has tended to focus on domestic issues, but also on foreign issues. Yes, Australian Foreign Affairs, as its title suggests, will be firmly looking outward.
I'm really interested in this magazine as a print product. When I saw it, when I picked it up, it immediately reminded me of the academic international relations subscription journals that I used to read at university. It's kind of a bookish in its format. I don't think any pictures inside. Is that a kind of deliberate echo of form that you were trying to draw with academic journals?
It is deliberately text-based. I would distinguish it from at least some academic journals because I don't think that readers of this need to come with any particular background or knowledge. So it's really for anyone who is interested in foreign affairs, in current events. We try to avoid jargon as much as possible. There's not intended to be assumed knowledge. But what we are trying to do is present in-depth essays, in-depth pieces, in-depth book reviews for people who are willing to sit down and often may want this in print, although it's available online, want to sit down and engage with ideas, with fresh analysis, fresh material. Obviously, there are magazines such as the New York Review of Books, for instance, which are quite text-heavy and also, present readable, compelling essays and arguments.
Tell me about how you selected contributors for the first issue. It's a really interesting mix of academics and kind of serious-minded journalists. Did you approach them? Did you put out a call for pitches? How did the process of putting this together work?
Yes, I approached them. Now, that was partly a function of being a first issue because by the time we publicly announced that this publication was going ahead, we had to have commissioned most of the writers. So I was approaching people that we wanted for this first issue and telling them about the fact that this publication was happening. So in future issues, I've already started to receive a lot of approaches from writers around the world. So hopefully going forward, it'll be a mix of us approaching people and people approaching us. In terms of selecting them, we had a series of kinds of pieces that we wanted in mind, and we wanted to fit the best writer to the piece. And that can be a journalist working in the field. It can be an expert or an academic or someone at a think tank working in the field. There's no set criterion, but we would expect that many of the writers with the main essays and really main reviews will have some expertise, some knowledge in the field, coupled with an ability to write in a compelling way.
Maybe you can tell me about two or three of the features that you have in this first issue, just to give listeners a flavour of what they can expect from the magazine.
We featured transcripts of two separate interviews that Paul Keating, the former Australian Prime Minister, gave. He is, you know, notoriously colourful and articulate in his delivery, and sort of a pleasure to read in a way that, that most politicians probably wouldn't be in their sort of spoken word or transcript form. So we have run an edited transcript. He approved us doing that. We've run a transcript of these two interviews where he's really outlining recent developments and how they're affecting Australia and the region, particularly developments such as Donald Trump's election and China's growing power. We will have a series of essays in each issue. We have an essay by James Curran, who's an expert on US-Australia relations at Sydney University, who's written a terrific piece about how Australia should handle Donald Trump and what Trump will mean for the US-Australia alliance, and looks at some of the different ways that Australia has typically handled the US, and he proposes what he thinks is probably the best way forward. And we have a piece by George Megalogenis, who is a journalist and social and political commentator in Australia. He's looked, and I suppose his piece is more journalistic, he's looked at the massive influx of Chinese and Indian migrants to Australia and what this means for Australia's outlook on the world and what this means for Australia's foreign policy. He's used very recent census statistics, which have just been released by the Australian government. He sort of commissioned that. So that's a very sort of fresh, more journalistic take on a recent development that's affecting Australia.
And finally, I'm interested in understanding your hopes for what this journal might achieve in terms of influencing the international relations debate. Obviously, most English language commentary and writing about foreign affairs comes from particularly the US, but also the UK. What can an Australian perspective add to the debate that's unique?
Well, I think that's exactly right, that a lot of it has, you know, in English language form emerged from the US and the UK. So I think Australia will allow not just a discussion of Australian foreign affairs, but foreign affairs that affect the region. I know there's interest in this publication in places like Singapore, Hong Kong. We hope that will extend at least across the Asia Pacific, if not further, for anyone who's got a strong interest in what's happening in this region, particularly, you know, given the rise of China, the rise of India, tensions in the South China Sea. It's a significant part of the world, and I think the rest of the world is looking on with interest. Australia has a lot of depth in this area, a lot of expertise, and so we hope to draw on that and to encourage discussion of some of these developments which we've been referring to, and how countries such as Australia are going to need to respond, because a lot of the discussion has been more confined to Canberra, to political circles, to sort of foreign policy elite circles, if you like. The aim of this publication will be to try to broaden that conversation and to encourage a more public debate about issues that are increasingly vital to Australia and to this region.
That was Jonathan Perlman, editor of Australian Foreign Affairs magazine. He was talking to Henry Rhys Sheridan. That's it for this week's programme. Thanks to our production team of Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Henry Rhys Sheridan, and our editors Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. Comments or queries are welcome, but please direct them to Fernando. You'll find him at fpmonocle.com. Don't forget to join us at the same time next week for more print delights. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you for listening.